images and the messages they convey are always very powerful. Images and the messages they convey have always been used by the state and those in power to move the masses in the direction that they desire them to. Even something as small as the I voted sticker conveys a powerful message. The message is that I have been obedient to the state. I've done my duty. I followed the cult into action. The I voted sticker is even a type of baptismal gown and an outward sign of initiation into the cult of voting. When President Donald Trump's would-be assassin missed the mark and Donald Trump descended to the ground, and after the third minute rose again and pumped his fist into the air three times saying, "Fight, fight, fight." The message associated with this iconic image is that what our enemies did to me, they will also try to do to you if you don't get to the ballot booth and fight to keep them out of power. Notice how the messaging from the world is always different from the message of the cross. The message of the cross is not that you should preserve your life by fighting to stay in this world, but to enter into our true life, our eternal life, we have to lovingly sacrifice our way out of this world. The message of Christ, after the state tried to kill him, after it tried to give him the death penalty for the capital offense of just speaking the truth and being a nuisance to the institution, and after he descended into hell and after the third day rose again, was not to fight, 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 or to pump his fists in the air, but rather to open his arms as an invitation to doubters like Thomas. Again, it was not to fight, 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 but peace be with you. When he appeared to Peter, his message was not to fight, 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 but to love. Love, love. We should always question the messaging that we receive from the states and light to the cross. We have to. That's our duty. As Christians, we have to discern through the messaging to find out what is true. So I wanted to engage in this conversation about the messaging from the states with John Paul from abidefire.com. He's also a writer here at St. Dominic's Media. And I hope this conversation gives you some food for thought. This is David L. Gray Show, off code and unscripted, on St. Dominic's Media. You know, I find it odd, my friends, my hounds of heaven, that I never knew not voting as an American would be a contentious issue, you know, until I decided in 2000, after the 2020 election, that I didn't want to participate in the process anymore. And I think a lot of people have their reasons why they don't want to vote, or why they don't participate in the process. For me, it just comes down to basically just three things. One, I think the system itself needs to be overhauled by representative governments. I don't think that structure anymore works. I think there's a time when I think we did need to have someone represent us and send them off to a place that, you know, they could represent us, Washington or your state house, and a time of horses and buggies when that was perhaps necessary. And perhaps there was a time when the people who we elected to represent us actually did represent us. I don't think that's the case anymore. So I think the system needs an overhaul. The other thing, I think there's a lot of ways we can participate in a common good. And our guest today is going to talk about the common good. We can participate in that call that we have to do as Catholics. But I think voting, going to a ballot booth, is probably the least effective way you can do that, I think. And the third thing, I think the most important thing is that I just reject the idea of voting as a sacrament. I think it's been elevated to the idea of a sacrament, so that somehow you can go to the ballot booth and change your life, as if as though that's some sort of grace of God that is efficacious through voting. Like, I don't believe that, and I don't want to be held accountable on Judgment Day for voting for evil, by voting for people who are never going to do evil and then vote to do evil. So that's me. But no, people vote for different reasons. Our guest today, JP John Paul, he's going to talk about some the bigger issue itself. But I know some of you have told me the reasons why you don't vote, and I respect that. And some of you told me the reasons why you do vote, and I respect that as well. But what I don't respect, what I reject, is just some of the false arguments that people give that are not compatible with Catholic moral theology, such as you have to vote for the lesser two evils. That's weird to me. That's weird logic. It's a logical fallacy. And the question I ask is, well, why must I vote for evil? Why must I vote for evil? If I'm going to vote and I know the person is going to do evil and I'm called not to participate in evil, why are you saying I must vote for evil? The other thing I find the funniest one, that's a logical fallacy itself. It's sort of like a, what's that logical fallacy? It's like a false equivalency I have to vote for evil. But by voting for evil, I also participate in evil. But I think another false equivalency is when people say that a non-vote is a vote. That's a logical fallacy. It's a false equivalency. You know, the two opposing arguments, you try and put two opposing arguments in opposition to each other, but they don't really flesh out. But it's also like a false dichotomy. It's as if those, you know, like there's just two options, that voting and non-voting is just the two options, when there's the whole broader issue. I think the church wants to put voting in is just the issue of the common good. And I also find it interesting that people who say, oh, well, you know, you have to vote, it's your rights and your moral obligation and stuff like that, are also sometimes the same people who sometimes traditional Catholics who would say, well, that's a modern, these are modernist teachings. Well, I think that's the case. I mean, this is a rather modern teaching that we have to vote, because we recognize that for the most of Catholic history, we had kings. And so there was a different participation of the Catholic in society. And I think we were closer to working towards, we realized that as Catholics, the common good was what we were working towards. And I think voting, this mechanism of voting, has really diminished our participation. It's made us lazy. You know, we think, oh, all I have to do is go to the ballot booth. I think there's more work to do. And I want to talk to our guest, John Paul, about that today. He is one of our regular contributors over at St. Dominic's Media. He wrote this wonderful essay that I want you to read. It's called Set Apart for Voting. I'll link it below. It's called Set Apart for Voting at stdominicsmedia.com. John Paul, JP, he goes by, I'll call him JP during this interview. He's a happily married husband to one wife and four children. He entered the Catholic Church in 2001 when he was working with, he's a live-in with the Missionaries of Charity. Over at our website, stdominicsmedia.com, there's an essay he wrote about his experience there, which I thought was powerful and moving. You can also see his conversion story at YouTube. Just type in his name or hop over to Catholic Recon. You can also find more about JP and his work that he does, the things that he writes at his apostolate. That is abidethefire.com. Abide, A-B-I-D-E, thefire.com. And by the same name, you can find him on YouTube. He makes these wonderful videos where he's just out getting his exercise in. He's running, and then he'll stop. Sometimes he's a little bit out of breath, but he'll give us a talk about something rather profound. So I really appreciate the work he does online. And JP, welcome on to David O. Gray Off Code Unscripted.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. I've always been moved by the work that you do. I think you're a very inspiring person. So I appreciate you doing what you do over at St. Dominic's Media. I want to get into your essay, Set Apart from Voting. I want to ask you first, like, what inspired that essay?
It's a long, twisted road. I'll try and give you the highlights, but It's definitely not something I could have foreseen, and it kind of ties in with sort of stepping away from the liturgy wars and just the bitterness and hatred I had in my heart. I was starting to work on it at the same time that I was shifting my sort of understanding of my country and American mythology is what I think of it now. But I was reading a lot of books by Solange Hertz, who is an extreme traditionalist, but very witty and funny. And what I liked about her books is she just gives you these large chunks of quotations, and it was causing a paradigm shift in my mind of, you know, we romanticize the American Revolution and all these things that we hold up as good. And I was indoctrinated really in this history and programmed for it. And when I started reading her books, it started shifting in my head, like, wait a second, independence, all these things that I started seeing that we hold up as virtues, they're tools for the demonic to make you self-reliant, self-determined, independent, autonomous. And it didn't seem in line with my values as a Christian and wanting divine union. And so as that is shifting, I decided, well, what if I just step away from it and I quit thinking about it? And I just see what happens with my mind if I just sort of unplug for a while. I used to every day wanting to get updated on politics like it was my sports teams and watching the game. I was addicted to it. Didn't even realize I was addicted to it. I thought I was being responsible and aware of the world. But as my paradigm shift is happening, I'm recognizing because I've had substance abuse issues I've worked through in the past, and I'm realizing that I'm addicted. This is all, I'm starting to realize all these things I thought were healthy were unhealthy, and I just needed to step away. And when I stepped away from politics and I just said to myself, I'm just not going to even think about voting for a year. I'm just going to step away. It's not even going to be my concern. The world will be the world without my vote. And just when I had that sort of willpower to just make that decision and step away, my heart got lighter. And all that bitterness I had towards the church and the bishops and stuff, it was starting to lighten. So this extreme traditionalist, Solange Hertz, I mean, she can get pretty rough. And that's kind of why I liked her a lot, because I was in that. I was being fed by that. That was in that spirit. But she's releasing me from this American wiring I have of, democracy is so precious, it's freedom and all that stuff. But I'm starting to realize, no, it's not freedom, at least when it's unhealthy and not sort of submissive towards God. It's the tool of it's the tool of the devil. That's what it's proven to be. That might be a harsh statement, but I think as soon as I actually stepped away and lived in a world where I don't really care about my vote, because my vote isn't contributing to anything that's bringing me closer to God, and my society is at a point where the common good and the value of the human person, that's not even on the radar. So politics have anything happening in my democracy has nothing to do with the vision that the church gives of democracy. If abortion's on the ballot, me not voting against abortion is not me voting for abortion. It's abortion on the ballot, that's proving that this democracy is not valuing the human person. It's not geared towards the common good. It's evidence that it's not authentic, it's not valid, it's not justified. All these things in Vatican II, when I was reading through it, it has strong language. It's the Christian duty to vote. But it's the Christian duty to vote in a democracy that's built towards seeking the common good and the value of the human person.
That's what you're saying. So the duty, and we'll get into this more, but just succinctly, you're saying that the Christian duty to vote has the prerequisite, I would say, it's not a blank check. Yeah. Okay. So there's a prerequisite is that the society has to be geared towards a common good. It has to be. So you're saying if you were in just complete in a society that's just completely immoral, this can create construct here where all the laws that are being passed are just anti-Catholic, anti-God.
Or even the spirit of it, even the function of it, even the direction of it and what it is geared towards and pointing towards. It's not pointing towards the institution of the democracy as it's become and maybe as it's always been. The church is loving and charitable. So just like you should be loving and charitable to someone you're evangelizing, you're not just going to beat them over the head with telling them how horrible they are, because we're full of sinners. The church is full of sinners. Yeah. She's going to be charitable and present democracy in its best light. And in its best light, it's seeking the common good. Right. It's valuing the human person. If anyone thinks that that's what our democracy is doing, then there's really no point in continuing the conversation. I've had too many of them, and eventually I'm called a socialist and a pacifist and a progressive. And these same people the day before who would not even blink an eye in acknowledging we have a godless society, suddenly they're talking about you have to give to Caesar what Caesar's and this is a God-fearing nation. It's because there's some addiction, I think, when you're sort of brought up in the putting democracy on the pedestal and not looking at it through the lens of the church and seeing that the duty is not in itself just to vote. The duty, the whole purpose of fulfilling your duty and the purpose of your vote is to participate in the common good to ensure the continuation of treating the human person with dignity. Democracy is not part of that game, at least right now. It's very hard for you to convince me that if you're saying I need to vote to curtail or hinder abortion, then this whole system is not set up for the common good in the human person.
And so you're saying that
we have so much more work to do before we get to the ballot box. We have to just get back to that prerequisite before the ballot box has any significance, any value.
And so succinctly, so if it's a godless society in actions or spirit, by participating in this system of voting, you're participating in that godlessness.
Yeah, and promoting the common good has nothing to do with choosing the lesser of two evils. How is choosing the lesser of two evils? That's not promoting the common good. So that whole thinking that's come about has nothing to do with the duty that the church is talking about. The church isn't saying you have a duty to vote to lessen the evil. No, it's a positive thing. You're doing something positive. And if you have this apathetic view of, we just have to work with what we got here, it's part of our duty. It's like you're being distracted. I think you are being sort of becoming of the world. No, just play it out. The alternative. Well, what's going to happen if you don't vote against abortion? There's going to be abortion. What do you think is going to happen if you win? If everyone votes against abortion, do you really think there's not going to be abortion? Well, if you do, then that means we're getting rid of the birth control pill. There's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, there's a lot of
work to even begin promoting the common good. And we're not even close. Yeah. So rather than devote our time to this sort of dead end, this addiction, Mm-hmm. We can step away from the addiction. And when we step away, at least in my life, especially if you really are of the mindset that you're telling other people, if you don't vote, then you're voting for abortion. If you have that crazy idea in your head, if you step away for a year, you might notice something in your heart becoming more receptive to the grace of God. And I think you'll be more effective in helping society meet that prerequisite before it to become my duty to vote. It's not going to happen by just throwing a ball against the wall and watching it bounce back and hit you in the head. Yeah. We got to think past the American myth. We got to think to the church wants democracy to be much more than what these, I don't know, zealots for democracy want democracy to be.
Yeah. Let me get into your essay a little bit, but I really like where you're headed and what you're saying. Especially, I like your point about how, you know, the idea of just making do with what we have, you know, voting for evil. Cause I like the idea of making do with what we have, but when it comes to like maybe cooking, like if you have like a rock and some water, some vegetables, maybe you can make soup. I like that idea in the kitchen, maybe with building some things, but with moral actions, that's completely, completely different. But in your essay, I want to read this part here. John, we're speaking with JP. Mm-hmm. He is at abidethefire.com. Also, you can find him at St. Dominic's Media and on YouTube by the same name. You say that the irony for the American who cites this verse of scripture, and I'll read it, when you say, as he said to them, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar and to God the things that are God's. When one cites this verse of scripture to insist upon the Christian's obligation to vote, in the context pertaining to the taxes that are Caesar's due, no taxation without representation, is a treasured mantra for modernism's mythology of anointed democracy. This mantra is rooted in a contradiction to the teaching of Jesus. Talk about that a little bit more, John.
Well, the reason I bring it up, because that's usually where when I'm talking to a Christian who's disturbed by my stance, that comes up a lot. And I'm trying to be charitable and not to get like lose my cool a lot of times when it reaches that point, because I've already been called a socialist and all sorts of things. So now they're going to hit me with the word of God to get me in line. And it's so enormously ironic, because that's what we've placed in our romance of the development of democracy. That's an American invention. The democracy that spread throughout the world, it started in America. As far as the democracy that the church is dealing with and trying to convert and mature, it started with the American Revolution, and it started not on some pretty soil. Some of these founding fathers have motives that aren't the best motives of some sort of virtue of democracy. They're very self-centered at times. But setting that aside, if you are in love with the American Revolution and the invention of democracy, then you have to sort of at least you can't score it all a win-win-win on the column of democracy. If democracy is all about fighting against being taxed by Caesar, and if you're going to quote that scripture to me to tell me to vote, and this whole setup, this whole invention of democracy, which demands my vote, is also at the same time teaching something that's completely opposite of Christ, then I want to tell them, then that might be an indication that you're kind of on the side of the demonic, or at least the antichrist spirit here, if you don't have the humility to just pay your taxes. So you're going to start a revolution, you're going to overthrow Caesar, you're going to, rather than the authority that's given from God to kingdoms and kings and governments, I think in a healthy way, in an orderly way, you're going to have all that authority come from man and rise up from the bottom. And when you do that, you're going to lose that connection and humility of the natural order of hierarchy and God, and you're going to lack that humility. Eventually, you're going to become this self-centered, at least I'll speak for myself, this self-centered person who's going to solve all the world's problems, and that's going to well up. Wow. If you leave it unchecked, eventually that's going to well up into your faith. And it might be Jesus that's telling you not to revolt against Caesar. And you might tar and feather them so that you can have your democracy, and then you can make everyone else like you. There's a demonic element to the whole start of democracy. And it's odd that that verse is the constant, at least in my experience, the constant one that comes up so that I can give my allegiance to democracy. Totally contradicting from its very beginning what that verse is teaching. It's not give to the ballot box what belongs to the ballot box. It's give to Caesar. That's not a democracy. I can give my taxes, whatever government it is. I can give my taxes as a Christian. That's my duty. I can give my taxes and not have a single thought of revolution. But if I'm wrapped up in politics and I got my team that has to win, I'm going to be ready to march in the streets and protest and exercise this democracy. And I'm going to keep fueling this sort of revolutionary spirit because I don't have that humility that comes with the order of Caesars and kings. I don't have any of that. I have just a bunch of cubicles of individual Caesars with their rights of private judgment, and they have their ballot that really goes nowhere, but I think it feeds something when you have this disordered structure of authority. It feeds something to where you really never give Caesar what is Caesar's. And when you pay your taxes, you complain about it. If you're complaining about paying your taxes or complaining about the way things are, you're not promoting democracy very well. You should just accept you're steering away. That's what it's doing. It's steering you away from getting comfortable with giving yourself to divine providence, getting comfortable with redemptive suffering. Yeah. The world isn't the way you want it to be, so you're going to have a revolution. You're not going to give Caesar what Caesar's, and if that keeps going, you're not going to give to God what is God's. You're going to start rebelling and revolting against the church that God gave you, which is revolting against Christ.
I see you describing, you're describing like a whole spirit here, right?
Yes.
And I think as you describe it, I find it like remarkable and it's sort of a beautiful way that how well that America has crafted this system by which they've convinced people that they can keep this system going if they just participate in it. And they must participate in it because this must keep going because it's just part of who you are, your Americanism, your heritage, and other countries do it as well. And I just think especially in the United States with the two-party system, they convinced everyone that these are your two choices. And you have a right to choose between one of these two choices. I find that the fact that this thing is even still going shows the depth by which we've been indoctrinated, doesn't it?
It does. And we can't even, I see it happen in the conversations I have. There becomes this panic, I guess, when you even begin to start to entertain some thought against this thing you're addicted to. It's like, it's too much of a paradigm shift all at once. And it was a long paradigm shift for me. I mean, I joined the military not because I wanted to be a soldier or a hero or anything like that, but because I read Socrates. So I had this strong principle if my country ever goes to war, I go to the front lines, because what he explained he owed to his country. So I had it like welling up inside of me. I'd made a lot of sacrifices for my country because I love my country. And it was painful as it was, and it was subtle. I mean, God is clever. He knows how to get through a thick skulled Neanderthal like me. I'm not a Neanderthal, and I shouldn't have said that. But he gradually pulled me back. And then once I started sort of just stepping away from the addiction, once I detoxed, more grace comes in. When you just sort of conceive of a world where you really, truly trust in God. And if you are to participate in whatever authority that God has provided, whether it's whatever it is, democracy, let's say democracy, if you choose to participate in it, you don't compartmentalize. If you're a Christian, you don't compartmentalize that you're voting now. So you're doing your Christian duty voting. And that's how you're participating in society. And then you're going to go to church and pray. You live as a Christian everywhere you go. And it's geared not for the lesser of evils, but it's geared towards conversion. It's geared towards being the hands and feet of Christ. You're not trying to treat the society you live in and participate and contribute to the common good. You're not treating it like a game, a sports match where your team needs to win. There's no winning in democracy. There's only faithfulness when you're a Christian. And if it truly is a duty, it's a positive duty. It's not this apathetic thing that we create with democracy. And we separate God from our minds.
You're saying your essay set apart for voting or St. Dominic's Media. You say that are we not able to recognize the incompatibility between a devout Christian and a wicked democracy? Yeah. Should we not consider the requirements for a democracy to compel Christian participation? Is that kind of what you're talking about now? This compulsion is that they're compelling the Christian to vote and we've been deconstructed and indoctrinated into this new thing where we cannot no longer make this distinction between who we are and who they are.
Yeah. I think we eventually, it's like peer pressure. You have this identity as the member of the democracy that you sort of conform to, and you lose that calling to be set apart from godlessness. And that calling to be set apart from godlessness isn't just an external reality. That's a day-to-day, hourly reality. You have to set yourself apart from godlessness in all the little choices you make. You have this urge to instigate or participate in gossip. Oh, it's just a little thing. Oh, it's just, that's what we're doing. I'm just getting along. It's not too bad, but you just keep on giving these little venial sins. You're watering it. You're being a part of it. And eventually your conscience is going to stop disturbing you. It's going to become a lot easier. And if you're just choosing the less of two evils, if you're just hoping that your guy wins the race, even though your guy is in no way really dedicated to the value of the human person, and there's very few that I see that are, if you're just trying to get your political victory, then I don't know if you're gearing up for the martyrdom that you might need to have in your life on a daily basis.
Because I think that's a response. That's the thing, the response that people have to, John. They'll say, well, JP, what do you want me to do? You want me to just live in a society and let it just fall apart?
Do you really, really surrender your life to the divine providence of God? Because if you truly, truly surrender your life to the divine providence of God, then St. Catherine of Siena is not going to be crazy when everything's falling apart and she's staying steady and she's keeping her eye on Christ and she's being called to be faithful. If it falls apart, if everything falls apart because of our sin, because we live in a society that doesn't value the human person, then that is the divine providence of God. And that's probably what we need. But my goal isn't success. My goal is faithfulness and conversion. And if I take myself apart from the world that I'm in, then when they see the person who isn't wrapped up in politics and getting political victories, but is paying his taxes and is willing to lay his life down for his country and is willing to be a good contributor to the good of society, I think that that's the answer. And I think that that will have more weight, more moral weight to call people to break free from just going along to get along and thinking of political victories. The demonic is so deep embedded in all of our society, beyond the politics. It's everywhere. You cannot turn around and not see it if you have eyes to see. So you need to get in this real deep spiritual battle. And the politics, that's incidental, because whoever wins, whatever law gets passed, that battle is still taking place. So you can't take your eyes off of that battle till we can just get to a point where the soil is tilled and we can all be on the same page of valuing the human person and seeking the common good. Until we do, the thing is broke. It's broke. So it's only functioning when it's in participation with and fulfilling that directive towards the common good in the human person. You can't start with the vote and work your way backwards. You have to start here, and then that vote will help guide it. So a good thought exercise for this is take yourself out of the politics and all that stuff, and you belong to, a library board or some sort of organization, some sort of sterile organization that's just to serve the common good. And someone there, you're having your election to vote who's going to be whatever position of office. And then someone raises their hand and said, I'd also like to vote for us to take some of our funds and to give them to Planned Parenthood or to give them to some mortal sin. Are you going to sort of respect and think that this is like some sort of functioning power of participation towards the common good? Or are you going to try and speak to that person and bring them back to sanity and not even entertain the vote? I'm not going to entertain that vote. And we have an issue now that goes beyond having a vote. At what limit do we say we're done here? We got to get back to fixing the machine so that we can operate it. Right now it's broken.
Well, I think the game that I think has convinced a lot of people in that regard is that it was brilliant on their part not to make voting like some sort of required law that you don't go to jail by not voting. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was beautiful because when I say beautiful, I don't mean the good beautiful. I mean, beautiful is in these evil machinations that we don't recognize. So it's a deformed beauty that they say, well, it's not the law to vote. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, JP, what they've done is they indoctrinated us to believe that, man, if we don't vote, it's almost like breaking a law, right? They've deformed freedom. They said, well, to be free, to be truly free in this system, keep the system of freedom going, you have to vote. So it's like in our head, we're thinking, man, this is what I have to do. And so what you're saying is that's not true freedom. In fact, with that in place, it's very hard to get to the place where we can truly work to the common good, because these are two different trajectories. There's this path of freedom that says you have to vote to have it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the path of towards the common good, which you're saying is antithetical to voting in a system.
Yeah, I don't know. There's one thing: if you're a godless person and all you know is the loyalty you owe to your country, that's just give to Caesar and don't even worry about God. But at what point do we ask, what does Caesar owe? And if we're not dealing with kings anymore, we're dealing with democracy. It's what does democracy owe? Well, the church says it owes an objective and a direction towards common good and value of human person. That's what democracy owes to God. It's not paying its due. And so if whatever you're giving to democracy, it's not in the order of how God, or at least how the church says this can work out. Because basically, the church, like a good mother, is going to deal with the reality. We're not going to be, I can't be a monarchist because that seems unrealistic. We're not going to get back to that. We're in a godless world, and it's godless. There's nothing that I see that leads me to think that anytime soon the world's going to have a conversion and we'll all be converted to the Catholic Church and the liturgy wars will be over. We're just in a complete mess. If we just take our heads away from this idea that voting is going to solve this mess, if we just think that, well, if I don't vote, the world will still be a mess. If I do vote, the world will still be a mess. So what am I going to do about the mess? Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the problem isn't that we don't have enough wise voters. Well, even if that is the problem, then the solution's the same. If the voters need to value the human person and the common good for their vote to be effective to achieve it, then we have to focus on the conversion. You're not going to convert them with your vote. It's not going to happen. And even if you win, it's going to be fleeting. It's going to be temporary, because whatever sort of placating victory they give you, oh yeah, you stopped abortion, good job. Well, great, but the babies are still being killed. Just take a pill. You're good to go. Go to Walgreens. Okay, so my vote really didn't impact the culture of death. And in fact, you take it away from this state, well, we'll just have the corporations bus you over to the state that's going to give it. So you have really not, you haven't zeroed in on the target. You've sort of created this counterfeit virtue.
I think isn't this idea, though, in that regard, that people think by voting, it's some sort of a legislative act that, and perhaps it is in places where you can change the constitution by voting, that is saying, well, by voting, we affect the legislative act. And if the legislative act is moral, then somehow we're working towards changing people's hearts, because this is a heart issue, right? I mean, you know, it's right after Planned Parenthood fail, you know, all the states were just voting for abortion. So it's always a heart issue, not a legal issue, but can we change hearts by changing law?
Well, the problem with that, I don't know if it's in the queue, an essay I wrote a while back, I examined the Supreme Court, in particular, how it undermined all the voice of the people with regard to obscenity laws. So the people spoke, people voted, and the legislature was there. We had obscenity laws in the states spread throughout the country. There was obscenity laws and they were enforced. But we got these three branches of government. And since it is a godless government that isn't seeking the common good, that doesn't value the human person, all it takes is one Supreme Court to just whittle away all of those votes. And that's what's happened. So if we're thinking that even if everything works out with our vote, our precious vote, everything works out, if it works out in a society, in a culture, in a structure that's not primarily focused on the value of the human person, the common good, and not about independence, freedom, autonomy, all these demonic things that the Supreme Court justified in just wiping away all the obscenity laws, which cleared the way for all the perversion, which cleared the way for the taking the laws that were against divorce and clearing the way for all this destruction of society, and then eventually to abortion. If we don't have everyone on the same page in whatever country or government, maybe democracy could work, but not in our country. It's set up to fail. The way it's structured, that even if you get your wish, we have so many balances of power that if they're all dedicated to independence and godlessness, then it will be independent and godless. So you're not going to have my vote. That may disturb you, but I'm a small minority. And the only point that I share to these people that I end up in these conversations with is that there's a bigger picture. There's a bigger picture. And I recently had one with a devout Christian who's a big supporter of Trump, but also a big pro-life advocate. And I wanted him to have a thought exercise. If, forget about Donald Trump, if the last time you're on your March for Life, before you even knew about Donald Trump, someone got up there and said, "Hey guys, I'm still going to do all these things that you don't want me to do, but I'm way better than the other guy. Do I got your vote?" Would they be, "Yeah, you're the man"? No, they've been gradually cooked. They've been boiled. It's been gradually brought up to where they don't even realize that they have now compromised their own moral principles and standards. And that will eventually overflow into those moments of venial sin where you're just like, "Oh, well, it's, you know, yeah, Donald, whoever, it's maybe not charitable, but you gotta get this win. You gotta get along." It's gonna infect you. If you
that's true. Yeah, compromise is a poison. I mean, especially moral compromise, that's a poison. And JP, you haven't even talked about, we're running out of time here, but man, it's been a wonderful conversation. We got to revisit it because you haven't even addressed, I think, even so much. You sort of alluded to in your essay, you point to it. And the essay is at stdominicsmedia.com and is set apart for voting. I'll be there to read it. That's in the description box. But when we talk about this godless democracy, we haven't even really touched on corporations and fund managers and this whole thing that's really controlling the whole system. When we talk about the things that really impact who becomes these elected leaders and how voting plays such a minimal role, we're talking about the corporate influence. We're talking about PACs. We're talking about just all the other things that these unelected leaders that runs BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, and all these Boeing and all these other corporations that really, I think, it play a bigger role in making this a godless society and can determining the outcomes of elections. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely, I mean, everything when you have a machine that's not the way the church says it needs to be, or a system or a structure of government or society that doesn't start where it needs to start, and actually starts pointing you in the opposite direction, then everything that comes out of that is gonna be what we see. And I don't see much unity. Well, our history gets whitewashed a lot. And it's just been this constant struggle of trying to just be decent human beings and figuring it out the real hard way. And now we've reached this point where it's gone from just being like jerks to each other to where we're kind of soulless, and we just have zero conscience. And so if you have zero conscience, it's maximize pleasure, minimize pain. It's not about what's moral. It's about what's legal. It's not about redemptive suffering, it's about getting these sort of temporal victories that are incidental, that really don't mean anything. And I think with this type of society, you should hope that everything falls apart. You should want this thing that you're fearing, because the soil needs to be tilled. And just on an individual level, at least, if you're sleeping, you need to wake up. If you can't stand the thought of suffering, and you're just a trained dog that needs to just have affirmation and comfort, then you should hope for some suffering. You should hope to wake up. You shouldn't hope for things to continue as they are. And the only reason you would is that you're kind of blind to it. And I think that's what we are, a lot of us. We're a bunch of blind people walking around. I am throughout the day. And I need to have these constant conversions with God. I need to have these disturbing things in my conscience to tear me apart from the world. This world is comfortable because it's so simple, and it doesn't require me to die. It just requires me to win. I need to get out of that mindset. I shouldn't even care whether I win or lose. It should be steady. I know I'm getting animated here, and I apologize for that. So I've probably talked past you a bit. No. But you're one of the few people, maybe, where I can say some of these things, where I don't end up being called a progressive. And this is something I need to be working on, my own anger and stuff, because I'll be more articulate when I speak to someone. It's a sad, sad reality that it goes beyond just sort of being blind when you're caught up in all this and you participate in all this, because it spreads into the world. Because we're so, I think, dumb Americans, we say USA and wave our flag and think it's so beautiful because we're the free democratic country, and
we're spreading land of the free, so home of the brave.
Yeah, and we're spreading so much evil. I will die for my country, but it's time for me to stop being so infatuated with it and start loving Holy Mother Church more than I do being democratic or whatever I happen to belong to.
Well, thanks, Jay and John Paul, for this wonderful talk and wonderful essay. And I hope all you guys go and check it out and read it. Give us some consideration. One of the important things we just have to do as Christians is just to wrestle. Mm-hmm. If something rubs us wrong and we're not comfortable with it, we do have to still flush it out morally to find, is this true? And so that requires that we get in, that we wrestle with it. That's one thing we just don't do when we encounter uncomfortable things. And sometimes we don't do what JP did in his life, just do, or the card did, just sort of reset and say, ask the question, is this true? We have to get in there and wrestle and do that. So I hope you appreciate this conversation with JP, and check out his essay. And again, thanks for coming in and being part of this conversation. Looking forward to your comments below. But until then, until next time, blessings and shalom to you and to yours and your family as well, John Paul. God bless you.
Thank you, David. God bless you.